Today's subject is going to be maybe not the easiest and the nicest to hear subject, but I think we're going to learn something important. And the perspective that I'm trying to convey, I will try to convey, I think it's going to be an important move into understanding how the Jewish law, halacha, understands the learning of Torah of non-Jews. Now, there are, believe me, so many sources, so many different views and real big, huge sages talking about this and discussing this in different ages and different times. What I'm going to offer is one perspective, one way of looking at it, quite lenient, that's the truth. And you will see why. I'm going to bring the sources, not my invention, not my idea, and so on. But you should know that even though what I'm going to teach, I hope, God willing, it's okay, and it's proper, and it's good, and it's kosher, so to speak, appropriate, you should know there are other opinions also. And if you find somebody else saying something different than what I'm going to teach, you should know sometime, maybe, I suppose, they have a source. And I suppose they have to sit and learn and learn the subject deeply, really deeply. I'm basing myself in two sources. Actually, let's start. This is basically the roadmap. What we're going to see along the class. We're going to learn a piece of Talmud, a piece of Rambam, very short, Me'iri, kind of long on the Talmud. And then two main sources that are actually what I really want to teach. The other is basically known. There's a rabbinic response of the Sridei Eish. He was called Yechiel Weinberg. He passed away in 1966. So we're talking about somebody of our times, contemporary. He has a long, long rabbinic response on this subject, which is very interesting to sit and learn in itself. But it's too long to learn it right now. So I'm just going to bring a few points of the ideas he brings. And then we're going to learn two short, not inside, outside, pieces of talks of the Rebbe on non-Jews learning Torah. These are the two main sources I'm basing my class today. And then we're going to see, like, conclusion. Okay, what can you learn and what can you not learn? Let's move on. Let's go. First source, that this actually appears in a few places in the Talmud. It's a very known and famous source, and this is basically the beginning because timely, chronologically speaking, this is the first source of the whole thing. Rabbi Yochanan said, a non-Jew, and there's a whole discussion, what actually says the Talmud? Most of the versions of the Talmud says Akum. Akum means Oyved Koychavi Mazales in Hebrew, means an idolater, a pagan. That's the most famous version of the Talmud, but the actual version that was not touched by censorship says Nochri. Nochri means a stranger. Stranger means a non-Jew. That's what it's talking about, a non-Jew. So that's why I actually put a non-Jew. I should have, if you follow the regular printing of the Talmud, even the modern ones, over there it should say not a non-Jew, it should say idolater. Okay, but the truth is it says a non-Jew. And it's not my invention. It's actually coming from different places. There's a book called Chisrei Nezashas. The things that the Talmud doesn't actually say because the censorship took it away, but it says over there that it should say Nochri. A non-Jew that learns Torah, he has death penalty. We're going to learn in a few minutes that death penalty doesn't mean that we go and kill him. No. In between parentheses, we don't kill anybody for anything, don't worry. Why? Because today we don't have the temple and we don't have the power to kill anyone for anything. So it just means a way of understanding how grave, how terrible a particular aveira, transgression is. If it has a death penalty, it means it's really a tough thing to do. If it doesn't have death penalty, it's a wrong thing to do, but it's not so terrible. Okay, so basically, this is what it means. So, now, a non-Jew learns Torah, death penalty. In the same page, Sanhedrin 59, same page, I copied these from Sefaria. The true version of the Talmud doesn't have so many words as we have over here, but whatever, to understand the thing, the Gemara raises an objection. The Talmud says, what do you mean? What Rabbi Yochanan says doesn't make any sense. That a non-Jew that learns Torah has death penalty. Why not? Because we learn a statement by Rabbi Meir. That actually, Pesach Sheni, 14th of Iyar, was the Yortzeit, the anniversary of passing of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir would say like this. From where is it derived that even a Gentile who engages in Torah study is considered like high priest? So wait a second. Rabbi Yochanan says, a non-Jew learns Torah, let's kill him. Or whatever. God is going to kill him, as we're going to learn. But Rabbi Meir says different, completely different. He's like a very high person, very lofty person, a high priest. How do you know that? Because there's a verse. The verse says, you shall therefore keep my statutes and my ordinances, my laws, says God, which if a man does, he shall live by them. So Rabbi Meir says, wait a second, a man does. He doesn't say if priests, Levites, Israelites do, they shall live by them. It says men, which means human being, not man and not woman, means a human being, which indicates mankind in general. These are the words of Rabbi Meir. You have therefore learned that even a Gentile who engages in Torah study is considered like a high priest. So wait a second, we have a contradiction over here. Rabbi Yochanan says one thing, Rabbi Meir says a different thing. So what do we do? And the Gemara Talmud brings a very easy, simple solution to this dilemma. The Talmud says, when the non-Jew is learning the seven laws of Torah, so we're fine. He's like a high priest. When the non-Jew is learning other forbidden parts of Torah, that we don't know what this means right now, we're going to learn about this later. When a non-Jew learns forbidden parts of Torah or in a forbidden way, as we're going to learn, then he has death penalty. That again, death penalty doesn't mean that we go and kill him. Rather, God takes care of him, spiritually speaking. Okay. So then we have, again, the first source where it appears, as far as I know, that there's a prohibition for a non-Jew to learn Torah. Okay, let's move on. This source is brought down by the Rambam, because many, many ideas in the Talmud actually are not law. For whatever reason, we're not going to learn Talmud right now. We're just learning a small piece. But this particular one, it is brought down by the Rambam. And when the Rambam is talking about the laws of non-Jews, laws of kings, chapter 10, and so on, when the Rambam speaks about these particular laws, he brings clearly, copies basically, the exact language of the Talmud. It says, a Gentile, a non-Jew, who studies the Torah is obligated to die. Whatever, death penalty. They should only be involved in, this is an addition of the Rambam, they should only be involved in the study of the seven commandments. That's it. That's what you should be learning. Not more than that. Now, there's a response of the Rambam. There are many books about the Rambam, and some of them are not so known, some of them are more famous and so on, but there's a response of the Rambam talking about all of this. What does it mean, obligated to die? And the commentaries of the Rambam actually bring out the same idea. It means a spiritual death. That's point number one. Don't think that the based in the group of judges, the court of judges, is going to go and kill anybody. No. It means a spiritual death penalty. Okay. And then the Rambam brings a very interesting idea. He says like this. It is allowed to teach a Christian the commandments and their explanations, the mitzvahs and their details, according to the law. That means according to what Jewish law explains. Why is it permitted, allowed? Maybe they'll come back. They come back. And if they don't come back, don't worry. It's not a problem. You can actually teach them. Why? Because you're not going to find in our Torah anything so different than what they have. Like the commandments basically are the same, even though they changed so many things. And don't forget, Rambam's talking about Christianity in year 1000. Today, it's kind of different. And it suffered, so to speak, Christianity. Many, many changes around the ages and the times and so on. But Rambam clearly is saying that it's not black and white, so to speak, this thing that you cannot teach a non-Jew Torah. Not, the Talmud says this. You're right. But you have to see exactly what kind of person this is. And this we're going to learn about this later also. You have to see what kind of person this is. Certain people, you can actually not teach them, pagans and so on. Why not? Because they're not really interested in Torah and anything like that. For whatever reason, we're going to learn what the Meiri says in a minute. But a Christian you can teach. And interestingly, the Rambam also talks about Islam, Muslims. That you can also teach them. They have this basically the same God. They're monotheists and so on. Okay. So we see, again, the Rambam brings this Talmudic source as a law. And he has an explanation of this law. Let's move on. This is kind of long, but I think it's very interesting and important to read it and to understand what the Meiri is talking about. Who was the Meiri? Meiri, we're talking about a rabbi in France, 1300s. Most of his writings, which are quite kind of long, most of his writings were hidden from many, many great sages. And only in the last years, like, if I'm not mistaken, in the 50s or the 40s, or even a little bit before that, but not so long ago, it was brought out to light what the Meiri wrote. So that's why he's not so quoted around the responses and the rabbis and so on, because they didn't know what he wrote. They didn't know that he even existed. Okay, so the Meiri writes like this. The law is that if he, a non-Jew, engages in the Torah without, I stressed a few words, not the Meiri himself, without the intention of fulfilling the main points of the commandments, that means there are seven commandments, don't kill, don't steal, and so on. If a person is learning, a non-Jew, is learning Torah, because it's just whatever. He's not planning on doing anything with it, but rather his heart desires to descend to the knowledge of our Torah and Talmud. He wants to know what the Torah says. Teach me what the Torah says. Parentheses, there is a story in the Talmud where actually a non-Jew, Talmai HaMelech, that's what it's called, Talam the whatever, in English, I don't know how to say this, Talmai HaMelech, the king Talmai, he was a king in Egypt, a Greek king in Egypt. He asked the Jewish sages to translate the Torah, and they did it. There's a whole story about this. I'm not going to say the whole story, but the point is that they did give him this Torah. Some authorities say that they did it because they were afraid he was going to kill them, so they did it. But over here, we have a non-Jew. He's not interested in keeping anything. I don't care what the Jews really say I should be doing. I just want to know what they say. Interestingly also, there's an explanation, Rabbi Margalios brings this, that the reason why Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, around the year 200 of Common Era, wrote the Mishnah was because the Romans wanted to know what the Jews learn, what the Jews think about. So he wrote the Mishnah. And according to that explanation, he explains actually why Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi left a few things out of the Mishnah, like tefillin, like Hanukkah. There are a few explanations about this, but we do see around the story of the Jewish people, of humanity, mankind in general, we do see times that the Jews actually explained the Torah to non-Jews, and there was a king, Shavur Malka. He was an expert, non-Jew, a king of Persia. He was an expert in financial laws, economic laws, damages laws. He was an expert. And where did he get these ideas from? From the Jews, of course. Like, you couldn't go to Google and Safari and look for the books. It wasn't such a thing. So definitely he learned from another Jew, from a rabbi. Okay, so we see this. But the point over here is we have a non-Jew. He's not intending to fulfill anything. He doesn't care about what the Jews say. He just wants to know what they think about. And when he learns, he deserves to be punished. Why? It's wrong. What he's doing is wrong. Why? Because people think that he is ours, that he is a Jew, because they see him as knowledgeable and will come to err after him. He's a non-Jew. He's a pagan or whatever he is. He believes in something else different than what the Jews believe on, but he really knows. So he might confuse other people into following his path. So therefore, it is not allowed for him to learn Torah. We don't allow him. He has a spiritual death penalty, as we mentioned before. That's case number one. Let's go to case number two. And since he engages in the principles of seven commandments, Another case. Now we have a non-Jew that wants to learn Torah. Why? Because he wants to know what God wants from him, from her, whatever. And their details and what comes from them, despite the fact that most Torah bodies are included in them, that means when the Torah, this is a very simple example, but it could be other examples also. When the Torah says to a non-Jew, don't do idolatry, what does that mean? It means so many things, so many different things, that the details are brought down in the mitzvahs, in the commandments for the Jews, and the details that the Jews are forbidden to do also, the non-Jews are also forbidden to do, most of them at least. It is not a class on idolatry. The point what I'm trying to say is that even though for a non-Jew it might be one phrase, don't do idolatry, point, simple, so to speak, it is not such a simple thing. What does idolatry mean? What are the types of idolatry? Which ones are allowed, which ones are not allowed, which so many details. Like, for instance, for the Jews, there's one prohibition, one mitzvah called moilech. You cannot do moilech. Then there's another one, you cannot do this type of idoini. You cannot do this type of, so many different types of idolatry, that each one of them is a commandment by itself. For the non-Jew, it's just one commandment. But that's what the Meir is saying over here. Most of Torah bodies, most of the ideas of Torah are included in the seven commandments. So when you learn these seven things that appear to be seven quote-unquote simple and quote-unquote stupid things, now wait a second. Most of the Torah actually is included over there. So if a person is learning and he's engaging himself in the principles and the seven commandments and their details and so on, we respect him as a high priest. You see the difference between the first paragraph and the second one. I divide it into paragraphs. It's a whole, like a whole continuation of things. I divide it into paragraphs to understand what the maid is saying, the different cases he's bringing. There is no fear of erring after him, for he is engaged in his commandments. So we see this guy, second type of guy, different than the first one. This one, he doesn't want to know just what the Torah says, but he doesn't want to fulfill. He wants to keep the message that the Torah has for him. Tell me what the Jews have for me. And he's learning. That kind of person, and he's done in learning deeply, I mean, really profound learning. This kind of person is like a high priest. We're going to learn later what this means. It's like a high priest. You have to respect him, and there's no fear, no death penalty, not at all. There's no fear of erring after him. He's fine. Third kind of guy, different case, and even more so, says the Meir. If his investigation is with the intention of understanding the ultimate perfection of our Torah, like I really want to understand what the Torah talks about, to the point where if he finds it complete, if I really like this, he will return and convert. I want to be a Jew. So why is he learning? I'm learning to try to catch, to understand what these guys live for. Like, what do these guys do? And if I find it really interesting and really for me, I want to convert. I want to be a Jew. And even more so, if he engages in and fulfills the main points of its commandments for the sake of it, like for learning Torah, this is a fourth kind of guy. I don't want to convert. I can't, or I don't care, whatever the case is, I don't know. I just want to learn Torah, and not just the seven commandments. I really want to engage and fulfill the main points of its commandments for the sake of the commandments, just for that. Even in other parts of it, like, not just the seven commandments. You have to respect this guy. There are not, okay, you can learn English. You can read English also. You have to respect such a person. It's okay. He can do that. So we see the Meiri clearly explaining basically the same idea that Rambam brought before, not with the same words. First of all, it is forbidden. If you just keep the Talmud, it's terribly forbidden, you're going to die. Then the Rambam said, wait a second, it's not such a thing, it's not like that. And then the Meiri explained even more, some years after the Rambam, more clearly. Now let's move on. This is one of the main things that I want to learn with you today. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's kind of long. It's like 5-6 pages full of back and forth. This rabbi, the other rabbi. One of the interesting things of this Sridei Eish, actually, I don't know exactly how to translate this, but Sridei Eish means what's remaining of the fire. Why? He lived through the Holocaust, and he survived the Holocaust. And he is one of those that remained and passed through the fires. He remained from the fire. That's what he called his book. He really was a very interesting sage that you can see in his answers that he really knew. He quotes over here, over there, over there, over there, over there, and then he quotes another one, another one, another one. He really knew how to learn, and he comes to very interesting conclusions. So first of all, the prohibition for a non-Jew to learn Torah is, when is it forbidden, actually, to learn Torah for a non-Jew? When he's learning, like, in a fixed way. Fixed way means he goes to a yeshiva. I'm making up this. It's not his words. But he really, he's fixing his life. He's putting his life into learning Torah. And he learns from our books in a profound way. He says it clearly, and I'll explain in a second why. Also, so that's the only prohibition. That's when the prohibition is, so to speak, strong. When the person, the non-Jew, is learning just like a Jew in a yeshiva, in a school or whatever for learning rabbis or something like that, in that case, no, it's a problem. Why? When you actually, I didn't write it because I thought it would be too confusing, but when the Talmud says a non-Jew learning Torah, the Talmud actually uses a very specific word for learning, for the word learning. Learning means to lilmot. In Hebrew, we say lilmot. That means to learn, to read, learn, and so on. But the Talmud doesn't use this word. The Talmud uses the word asek. Asek means like a business. Like you really do it, make it your business and your life, and you're really deepening your life into this, in your mind into this, and so on. That's the way it is forbidden to learn for a non-Jew. But if a non-Jew is just learning, basically, this is what the Sri Deyesh says, and we're going to learn this in the Rebbe also, it's not forbidden. We have to argue actually exactly which parts yes and which parts no when we're going to do it. But basically, it's not forbidden if it's not doing it in a way of asek, which means profound learning. So first of all, conclusion number one, the prohibition is just when he learns in a deep way, in a profound way, and we're going to learn what this means in a few minutes. Also, look at it from the other perspective. The teacher, is he transgressing or not? Like, take the non-Jew. The non-Jew, nowadays, he Googles, what does the Talmud say on this subject? And Google is going to give you a whole list of things, you know, artificial intelligence, a whole list of things. You can learn here, there, and so on. Give me the translation. It's going to bring you the whole page. Is the Jew doing anything? The truth is not. Whatever. The non-Jew has access to a computer, and you can learn whatever you want to learn. You can't avoid this. You can't prevent this from happening. Like, the rabbis can't prevent this from happening. But what happens when the Jew is teaching the non-Jews? Like me, right now, I'm a Jew and teaching non-Jews. So what happens with this guy? Is it wrong what he's doing? No. He who teaches, if he does it in a profound way, is transgressing a positive commandment. The Torah is for Jews, it's not for non-Jews. This is conclusion, so to speak, number one, out of a whole back and forth between different sources. However, if you're going to tell the non-Jews the laws of the Torah, and these are his words, interesting, and illuminate them in the light of Torah, on the light of truth, that's allowed. That's okay. So see the very important difference between learning in a profound way, like open up a Talmud, start learning the different explanations and the different commentaries and what Rashi says, what Tosfos says, what Rashi says, what Ran says, this kind of learning is not allowed for non-Jews. I haven't found exactly why not. If you ask the Meiri, going back just a second, if you ask the Meiri, he's going to tell you, look, this guy is knowledgeable and he looks like one of ours and people are going to err after him. But that's why he's not allowed to learn in this way. That's what the Meiri would tell you. The Sri Deyesh doesn't bring, he brings the Meiri, I mean, he knows the Meiri, but he doesn't say exactly why it would not be allowed. But these are his conclusions. And to tell you the truth, also there's a Chassam Sofer, Moshe Sofer. He lives in the 1800s, in the mid-1800s in Europe. And he writes that when the Talmud says that it is forbidden for a non-Jew to learn Torah, he's talking about the non-Jews, you know, from ancient times. He's not talking about non-Jews of today. Because non-Jews of today can learn by themselves also. And there's no prohibition over there of learning, of teaching, and so on. But let's continue with what we're learning right now. If you're just telling him what the laws are, and you are illuminating a person in the light of truth, that means you're not just telling the person, go do this. Why should I do this? Because the rabbi says so. Okay. No, that's not illuminating a person. That's just telling a person what he has to do. What does it mean to illuminate? Actually, interestingly, we just read Parshas Emor in the Torah. Parshas Emor, it's a very interesting parsha talking about many, many subjects, nothing to do with what we're learning today, but it teaches a way of education. That's what I'm trying to say right now, of illuminating a person. How do you educate a person? So the Torah says, Emor lekoyanim ve'omar aleihem. Go tell, God tells Moshe, go tell the koyanim, the priest, that he have to behave in such and such way, and go tell them. Like, that's a repetition over there. Emor ve'omarto. That's a repetition. And Rashi, you can look at this commentary of Rashi. Actually, you can learn Torah with Rashi. Don't worry, we're going to get this to this. Rashi immediately jumps and says, wait a second, Emor ve'omarto, you're repeating the same word twice. Why? So Rashi explains, Lehazir gdoilim alaktanim. The literal translation is to basically rebuke the grown-ups on the small children. You have to go and teach the children. That's what it means. Go teach them. Izartim. Azara means go tell the person not to do this, not to do that, do this, do that, and so on. But then the Rebbe, there's a talk of the Rebbe on this particular Rashi explaining a very interesting idea. There are many ways of teaching, many ways of learning and teaching and so on. And the Rashi doesn't use the word lelamed. Lelamed means to teach. Lilmoid means to learn. Lelamed means to teach in Hebrew. He uses the word izartem. The word izartem, again, azara means like a rebuke, but it's directly related to the word zoyar, which means brilliance, light. How should a grown-up teach a child? In a way of zoyar, in a way of light. Illuminate the person. Don't just teach. You have to illuminate a person to understand what's going on, to enjoy the teaching, the learning, and so on. So this is the word, actually, that the Sri Dayesh uses. It doesn't say the word azara, it means the word oir, light, even stronger. You have to illuminate a person when teaching. Coming back to what I'm trying to say, it is allowed for a teacher to teach non-Jews Torah in a way of illuminating them, for them to understand what the Torah talks about, how to follow the message of Judaism for non-Jews, how to serve God, and so on. Maybe there is even a sanctification of his name, he says. And I'll explain to you in a second why he talks about this. Since through this, through learning, teaching, and so on, they'll know how to honor the rules of our Holy Torah. So not just you should teach them, you should illuminate them the way you teach, and you're doing actually something important. You're sanctifying God's name. Now, interestingly, this particular response, that you see the source over here, somebody wants to look at it. I don't know if it's in English, it doesn't really matter. He's talking about a rabbi wrote to the Sri Dayesh, look, I have to give a class of Torah. And in the class that I'm giving, there are Jews and non-Jews over there sitting, for whatever reason. Jews and non-Jews, can I actually teach or not? And he answered with like 5-6 pages explaining why it's okay. It's okay. And even maybe you're sanctifying God's name, Kiddush Hashem, when learning, when teaching. And he moves on, quoting the story that I told you before about Shavur Malka, who was a non-Jew Persian king. You can teach them laws of damages and similar, like really going into all the laws of the Judaism, since they are also obligated on them. In these particular ones, like being honest and not damaging somebody else and so on, they're also obligated to do that. So they can see and understand what the Torah says in order to use it in the practical life. Tell you more. I moved already from there, but I lived for 20 years in a city called La Plata. It's a small city in Argentina. And I was a rabbi over there. And there was a guy, I'm not going to say his name, so don't worry. There was a guy, I don't think you know him anyway. He passed away already. He was not a Jew. It was a whole issue with that, but whatever. He was not a Jew. He was a judge. He was an old, elderly man. He passed away not so long ago. I think it was 90-something. Until the last day, he was really working in his office, and he was a judge, a very respected and important judge in the area where I lived. And we respected each other in many ways. This guy learned Talmud, and he brought the ideas of Talmud, quoting pages and so on, this page and this page, and this rabbi says this and that, when he was actually giving law for the non-Jews. He was a non-Jew, giving law for non-Jews. You know, in Argentina, it's a country full of non-Jews, most of the people. And he solved certain cases. I didn't see the exact writings, but that's what, whatever. Some very knowledgeable people told me this. He brought the ideas of the Talmud in his writings to present to the other judges to solve certain cases. So the question is, wait a second, you have a non-Jew over here learning Torah. Why is he learning Torah? Because he wants to confuse anybody? Like, I'm a Jew? No. He's using godly knowledge in order to solve, so to speak, quote unquote, problems between non-Jews. Who cares? Let them solve their problems with justice of the country and so on. No, he used to use the Talmud in order to solve that. Not everything, of course, is practical for that, but interestingly, ask yourself, such a non-Jew, should we forbid him to learn Torah? What are you talking about? There's no issue over here of confusing people. No. He wants to apply godly knowledge into practical life. Of course, go learn Torah. Okay, let's move on. If you teach them, there is no problem of in front of a blind, don't put a stumble stone. Like, if a non-Jew is not allowed to learn, and you're teaching them, you're giving, so to speak, to eat something forbidden, you're giving them to do something that they cannot do. That's not a problem. Actually, this problem is brought down by Tosfos, by one of the commentaries of the Talmud. There's no problem. Why not? Since nowadays, in the 1960s, there are already translations, and they can learn by themselves. So you're not actually feeding them something forbidden for them, making them transgress, besides your own transgression of a positive commandment and so on. There's not a problem. They could learn by themselves. And I'll tell you more. If you're not going to teach them, so they're going to get another rabbi. There are other rabbis and there are other people that know Torah, and they're going to learn with somebody else. And who tells you that this somebody else is going to teach them in the proper way, according to true Jewish law and so on? Sometimes, I would say most of the times, non-Jews seeking to learn Torah, wanting to learn Torah with a true heart and so on, they end up in the hands of people that really don't know what Torah is all about. I'm not saying that I know everything. I don't know everything. I'm very far from that. But at least what I teach, I try to find out what's the proper perspective. I bring the sources and tell you what I think. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah, I could be wrong. Definitely. Of course, I'm a human being. But you never know in the hands of whom these people are going to end up. So, you know what? Better go teach them, because they could learn, I'm sorry, from some other places. This is the, so to speak, halachic law source to understand that, okay, this prohibition that we brought before, that non-Jews cannot learn Torah, it says in the Talmud, it says the Rambam, and so on, that's a very specific case. It's not such a big and all-encompassing rule for everything, every single case. No, that's a very specific case. We saw that in the Meiri, we saw that in the 3-day age, and now let's learn a little bit of a mystical, so to speak, not so much, don't worry, view out of this. There are two talks of the Rebbe, actually. There are more, but I wanted to bring two points, two main ideas of the Rebbe regarding this learning of Torah of non-Jews. One of them regarding the mitzvah, the commandment of learning Torah, whether they have a commandment or not. And the second one is, what about mysticism in Torah? Nowadays, everybody knows, you open YouTube and you get so many quote-unquote rabbis talking about Kabbalah and mysticism and then teaching for everybody and this and that. And people learn and people listen and it sounds interesting and it sounds mystical and so on. Can you learn that or not? Most of the times, I'll be honest, it's not even true what they're saying. I mean, they're repeating a text, but the results they offer when you do such and such thing are not true for many reasons. If time allows, I'll explain a little bit more. But let's go for this particular talk of the Rebbe, which I just brought a very short part of it. The Rebbe over there is talking about another subject for Jews. And he brings a proof from non-Jews to explain the subject for Jews. It's interesting, the other way around. So the Rebbe is talking about a blessing of learning Torah for women. We know, and if we don't, I'll tell you, we know that for every single mitzvah in the Torah, our sages instituted to say a bracha, a blessing, before actually doing the mitzvah. Whatever mitzvah it is, there are rules for this bracha and so on. Now, Torah is a mitzvah. You have to learn Torah. A Jew has to learn Torah every day. And depending on the capacity and the knowledge of the Jew, how much Torah has to learn, and so on. At least a little bit in the morning, a little bit in the night, and that's the minimum a person has to learn. And therefore, since it is a mitzvah to learn Torah, with the Bar Tabam, you will learn Torah, you will talk about the words of Torah, therefore you have to make a bracha, you have to make a blessing for learning Torah. The common custom in the Jewish people is to say the blessing, actually it's three blessings, once in the morning, and that goes for the whole day. Because we are supposed to be learning the whole day. Oh yeah, but I have to eat. Okay, so you stop learning, you eat, and you continue learning. Oh, but I have to go to the bathroom. Okay, you stop learning, you go to the bathroom, and you continue learning. Oh, but I have to go to work. Okay, so you go to work, you stop learning, go to work, and continue learning. But the truth is, there's an expression in Torah, it's interesting. Rabia de... There's a lion on top of you. Adia de Ravia Le. There's a lion on top of you. What does that mean? It's constantly on top of you. But for certain reasons, you can't deal with it, so you do something else. So the Torah is constantly, this mitzvah is constantly on top of the Jew. The Jew is supposed to be learning Torah the whole day and night. And this is a verse in Yeshua, you will learn Torah during the day and during the night. But we're humans, and we need other things also, sleeping, eating, and so on. So, okay, in that time, you're exempt. Exempted from learning Torah. But the rest of the time, you have to be learning Torah. So we make a blessing in the morning, and that's it. Three blessings. Now, there is no mitzvah of learning Torah for women, Jewish women. There's no mitzvah of learning Torah. And the Rebbe has a whole talk explaining that the truth is that even though there's no concrete mitzvah, commandment from God to the women, Jewish women, to learn Torah, but they also participate in the mitzvah of Torah, of learning Torah. And the Rebbe explains it in different ways. One of the ways is by bringing a very interesting teaching of the Ran. Rabbeinu Nissim, he lived in Spain in the 1300s. Huge, huge, important rabbi, printed in the back of the Talmud. He's an important rabbi. And he brings an interesting thing. I'm not going to explain all the details because it would take too long. But the idea, men, Jewish men, are commanded to have children. All right. I have an obligation to have children. Jewish women are not commanded by God to have children. It's not a mitzvah for them. But the truth is, of course, without going into the details because it's not important right now, a man by himself cannot have children. Wait a second, I need a woman. Otherwise, it's going to be difficult to have children. like my own children. So when the woman helps the man keep, fulfill his mitzvah, she partakes of that mitzvah also. And it's her mitzvah. This is what the Ran writes. And the Rebbe uses this idea to explain the learning Torah by men, by Jewish men. And the bracha, the blessing by Jewish women, that they also have to make a blessing for learning Torah. That's the whole point of the talk, to explain why a woman, a Jewish woman, also has to make a blessing for learning Torah. Why? Because she partakes of the mitzvah of helping her husband learn Torah, go to the synagogue, go to the house of study, and so on. This is basically in Hebrew we say the nekuda, the point, the core of the talk. What is the Rebbe connecting it to non-Jews? Why is he doing that? Because we find something similar in non-Jews. The Torah says, we learned it before, the Talmud says, that a non-Jew learning Torah is like a high priest. When he's learning by the seven commandments and so on, he's like a high priest. Now the question is, this is what the Rebbe wants to explain. When we say that a non-Jew learning Torah is like a high priest, which actually, a high priest is the highest type of soul within the Jewish people, the highest and loftiest and so on. Why is a non-Jew like a high priest when he learns Torah, the parts that are actually are for him? Is it because the person becomes a high priest? Or is it because the Torah itself has something very special that when somebody learns the Torah gives him this virtue, this thing, whatever it is, of elevating the person from the place where it is? And the Rebbe explains that actually is the Torah. It's because of the virtue of the Torah that when a non-Jew learns Torah, he gets elevated to the level of a high priest. Not because a person becomes a high priest by himself. No, it's the Torah. That there would be any other thing you could do to become a high priest. Like even if a non-Jew decides to do a mitzvah, which is a different discussion whether he can, he can't, which mitzvahs and so on, we're not going to discuss this now, but when a non-Jew does a mitzvah, let's suppose he asks the rabbi, and the rabbi says, yeah, go do it, no problem. Does he become a high priest? The answer is no. Hey, but the rabbi say I could do it. Yeah. Okay, you can do it, but you don't become a high priest. The only way, the only place where this expression comes up is just by learning Torah. Why? Because Torah has a very special thing. What does Torah have? The Rebbe brings some choices from a commentary in the Talmud that there's a verse, Yekara'im ipninim. The Torah is more precious than pearls. In Hebrew, pearls, we say penina. Penina is one pearl. Peninim means pearls. And the high priest used to enter the most holy place in the world, the Holy of Holies, that's what it's called. And in Hebrew, we say lifnai velifnim. If you pay attention, this word, lifnim and peninim, even though they don't look so similar, but the truth is that in Hebrew, it's the same word. Penina and penim is exactly the same word. So that's the comparison between Torah, which is Yekara'im Ipninim, is even higher than pearls, and it's even higher than a person that lives, quote unquote, within pearls. Not because he lived within pearls, no, but he entered a place called Lifnai Velifnim, like pearls. So from there we see that the Torah itself has a very profound and important thing. That when a person connects and learns Torah, he gets elevated to that level of high priest. That means that the same applies to a non-Jew. If this applies, and this is what the Rebbe says, if this applies to a non-Jew, of course it applies to a Jewish woman also. But the point is, this applies to a non-Jew. Why? Because when a non-Jew learns Torah, the reason why he's learning Torah is in order to understand and to know what God wants from me. How do I serve God? What's his message for me? And the only way to know this is to learn Torah, because this message is in the Torah. So when you're learning Torah, you're actually affected by the Torah, because the Torah is important for you. So what I'm trying to bring out with this teaching of the Rebbe is, don't think that when you're learning Torah, we just explain. You are allowed to learn Torah. We don't know exactly which parts. We're going to argue this in a second. We'll discuss this in a second. But don't think that this is just reading a book. Don't think that this is just like reading the newspaper or reading a website or looking at the news in this cell phone. No. You're dealing with yekara'im ipaninim. It's something higher than pearls. And I'm not talking about something economic, like how much does a pearl cost and so on. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about something that is even the precious stone of the crown of the king. That's what Torah actually is. The precious stone in the crown of the king. And when a non-Jew learns it with the proper mindset, when you're knowing what you're doing, and when you're actually learning in order to fulfill the laws of the Torah and so on, like the Me'iri said before, you're like a high priest. Definitely, you're like a high priest. Second idea of the Rebbe that I wanted to connect to this, that is not directly connected, it's my connection. The Rebbe has a whole talk, and actually we learned this, and it's actually recorded in the YouTube channel. The Rebbe has a whole talk on Yutes Kislev, 19th of Kislev. There's a letter by the Alter Rebbe, the founder of Chabad movement, regarding the miracles of the 19th of Kislev, that he was liberated from jail. It's a whole story, a long story. But the main point is that in his letter, the Alter Rebbe wrote that not just the Jews recognize the miracles that happened, but also it was an open thing in the eyes of the non-Jews, of the ministers and so on, that they said, "Me Hashem Yatsa, this was caused by God. This was a godly liberation, godly salvation." That's what the Alter Rebbe writes, basically. And the Rebbe has a whole talk again, trying to understand. Who cares about the non-Jews? Like, the Alter Rebbe, being liberated from jail and spreading out the teachings of Torah, of Hasidism, of whatever, he's writing about the non-Jews that they also recognized. Why? Because the truth is that the ideas and the teachings of Hasidism, this is what the Alter Rebbe lived for and so on, they are also for non-Jews. We can, of course, discuss certain parts that do not apply to non-Jews. Yes, there are many parts of Hasidism that do not apply to non-Jews, have no relationship to non-Jews at all. So you should not be learning that. There are many parts that do apply. And the Rebbe brings one specific thing in the idea of the faith in the unity of God. There's only one God. How do you know that? Okay, so go learn Hasidus and you will understand. Go learn the second part of Tanya and so on. This is not a class on the unity of God. But the point is that the Rebbe clearly says we have to spread out the teachings of Hasidus that apply to non-Jews, that help them understand the reality of life, the reality of the world, the reality of God, the message and so on. That has to be spread out, definitely taught to non-Jews. And the Rebbe says clearly, go learn the second part of Tanya. Shar Eich B'Emunah, the portal of whatever, the unity of God and faith and so on. So we do see that on one hand, there are certain things that we're going to learn in a second that are forbidden to be learned by non-Jews. And on the other hand, those parts of the Torah that actually have something for the non-Jew to actually grow in his relationship with God, in his relationship with other people in the world, those parts of the Torah definitely have to be learned. And the idea of bringing this particular part of the teachings of the Rebbe is there's some kind of mitzvah over there also. There's some kind of commandment, so to speak. Can you say it's the same type of commandment as a regular Jew? The answer is no. But the truth is that a regular Jewish woman also doesn't have the same type of commandment of learning Torah that a regular Jewish man. But the Rebbe compares Jewish women to non-Jews in this particular case of learning Torah. This particular, very particular thing of learning Torah. That doesn't mean, so I'm saying this so nobody misunderstands, that doesn't mean that a non-Jew should recite the blessing of Torah before learning Torah. No. Definitely no. And if you, for some reason, look at what the blessing says, it doesn't talk about the non-Jews. Definitely. It talks about Jews. So forget it. That's definitely a no. But there is some kind of mitzvah in learning Torah of non-Jews when they learn what they're supposed to be learning to, again, develop their relationship with God, with other people, and so on. Now, to finish, I thought it was interesting to know at least a few ideas, because it would be impossible for me to mention every single book around the world in Torah, which I don't know either, and say this book yes, this book no, this book yes, this one. It would be a very boring thing. So I'm just bringing very general ideas of what yes and what now, what no, I'm sorry, and for sure, if a person has a specific question, has to be asked to the rabbi, this question has to be asked to the rabbi, and the rabbi is going to tell you yes or no, why, and so on. So, anything, and I stress this word, anything that means even a mystical idea, like we just learned from the Rebbe, anything related to the Seven Commandments, for instance, don't do idolatry, what means idolatry, and so on, and their ramifications, a non-Jew can learn even in a profound way. Even in a profound way. Why? Because that's his Torah. He's learning what he's supposed to be learning. Now, the rest of the Torah that does not directly apply to him for whatever reason, if a person learns in order to understand it, he's allowed to do it, but not in a profound way. What does that mean? It means, can you learn Tanakh? I should have put like moved Tanakh under in order and so on. So in order to be clearer, but whatever. If he wants to learn Tanakh, Torah Nevi'im Ksuvim, the Bible, the famous Bible, which excludes completely the Christian garbage and so on. If a person wants to learn Tanakh, he's allowed to learn Tanakh, the complete written Torah, that's what it's called, with the commentaries, Rashi, Radak, whatever, if they are in English or in any other language, it's okay. Or if a person knows Hebrew, it's okay. You can learn that. It's fine. You can learn Mishneh Torah. Mishneh Torah is a book by the Rambam. There are other books by the Rambam also. For instance, Moreh Nevuchim, which is a complex book. You can also learn Moreh Nevuchim, the Guide for the Perplexed. It's a really complex book. I recommend only learning it with somebody that can actually guide you into the right way of thinking. Otherwise, it's very easy just to misunderstand. Very easy to misunderstand. Books, Jewish books, of course, that's what I meant, that help a person develop love for God, fear for God, like the duties of the hearts, Choyves HaLevavos, Orchis Tzadikim, the path of the righteous. You're allowed to learn these books. You should know that there are many, many ideas of these books that do not apply to non-Jews. Even so, like, of course, there are many ideas of Mishneh Torah, of the Rambam, that do not apply to non-Jews. Of course, many, many, most of it. However, you're still allowed to learn it. Why? Because again, a person wants to understand what Judaism is about and extract lessons and messages what a non-Jew can actually extract from those particular books. And if you have doubts, you should ask, does this thing apply to me or not? And the rabbi is going to tell you, yes, this detail, no. Or you should go through this direction, to the other direction, and so on. You have to ask. The main problem is when a person doesn't ask and assumes he understood, or she understood, whatever, it's the same thing. That's the main problem. But because most of the times, they misunderstand. I'm not saying, don't misunderstand me, I'm not saying that a person is a fool and he doesn't understand. Nah, you never understand anything, you're such a fool. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, does this apply to me or not? That's where most of the misunderstanding happens, actually. Because I read the book says blah, blah, blah. And I think it's a very nice thing. I want to do blah, blah, blah. Who told you it applies to you? No, but the book says, yeah, the book says lots of things for Jews. The book was written for Jews, by Jews, for Jews. Who told you it applies to you? So again, most of the misunderstanding actually happens in this particular point. Does this apply to me or not? Or to say it in a different way, but it's exactly the same thing, can I do this or not? That's where the misunderstanding happens. It's difficult to say it like this, but I think it's the only way it pops in my mind how to say it, so you'll forgive me if it doesn't sound so nice. Most of the things don't apply. there are certain things that do apply. So you have to ask, does this particular idea apply to me? I'll give you an example, a very simple example. Duties of the heart. And in the path of the righteous is so, he talks a lot about this. Fasting. Fasting, you have to fast day and night and day after day. And for 40 days if you did that. And for 50 days if you did the other thing. And, whoo, full of fasts. And a person learns this and says, oh, my life was full of idolatry and full of transgressions. If I learned these books, certain parts of the books, of course, I have to fast my whole life to fix what I did wrong. If you don't ask a rabbi, you're going to end up fasting your whole life. And after I don't know how many days, you're going to say, these Jews are all crazy. I can't live with this. Forget it. Bye-bye. I'm not fasting anymore. And I don't care anymore what the Torah says. Well, God, what do you mean, God? It's only fasting the whole day. That's Judaism, fasting and fasting. And the truth is that I would say more than 99% of Jews today, like very religious and so on, don't fast. Hey, but the book says to fast. Yeah, the book says lots of things, but every single thing has to be understood in the context, in the times, in the places where they were said, how does it apply to us today, and so on. I'll give you another example, a little bit more crazy, but I saw this and I was like enraged. I didn't like it at all. In the Spanish-speaking world, there are lots of rabbis, whatever, that teach, and they like teaching Kabbalah and this and that to Jews, non-Jews, they don't care about anything. And I saw a video, somebody sent it to me and asked me, Rabbi, should I do this or not? This guy was actually teaching, this is the words he was using, a blessing for water. A blessing for water. I was thinking like, yeah, there's a blessing for water, but it's the same blessing for anything else that doesn't come from the ground and from the trees and so on. I'm not teaching blessings right now. What do you mean a blessing for the water? A blessing for the water. So I watched the video for a short video. It was a very short video. And he was saying like this, look, there's a blessing you should say when a person has a sickness, God forbid, you should take water and pour it in one direction and then pour it in the other direction and say, Kail narefan ala, God, please cure me and so on. And you continue pouring the water and say this and you're going to get healthy. There's no one Jew, not one single Jew that does this. I can assure you this. If you have a sickness, go to the doctor. Don't start pouring water over here and pouring water over there and saying verses and call them blessings. And what are you doing? What are you teaching? Like maybe people like it because it's easy. And it's like a magical thing. Yeah, I want to get cured. Who doesn't want to be healthy? Everybody wants to be healthy. But don't sell, in Spanish we say rotten fish. Don't sell garbage to people. And they're going to be happy pouring water over here, over there. And the first Jew in their life that they ask, do you pour water every day, like over here? Nobody does this. You're not going to find Jews doing this. So why do you teach this to people? Even if you found it in a book, and the book does say that, nobody does it. But the book says, yeah, but nobody does it. So you have to ask, you can learn, it's fine. We have to ask, does this apply today in general? Should I do it in particular, and so on. All of the authorities agree that Kabbalah is not allowed to be learned by non-Jews. And the truth is, and this is not a class on Kabbalah, most of the Jews also don't learn Kabbalah, don't worry. And most of the Jews also should not be learning Kabbalah, don't worry. Why? Because when we say Kabbalah, it refers to very specific teaching about the names of God and their combinations and so on. And it's not such a spread out teaching, which is not the same thing as Hasidus. Hasidus means how to apply godly knowledge into your regular life, into your service to God and your service to the other people and your life with other people and so on. So I would definitely say that it's allowed to be learned Hasidus. There are certain things that do not apply to non-Jews, certainly. For instance, why should a non-Jew learn the mystical parts of tefillin, the myths of tefillin? For what? Anyway, you're not going to put tefillin. So why should we be learning this? You shouldn't be learning this. It makes no sense. Now, to end, it is not proper to make new commentaries and new ideas and connect things and bring out teachings and lessons and so on, that's not a proper thing to do, because there are many other ideas that a person doesn't know. Maybe you're wrong with some other details that you didn't even know, and so on. And to end, this I took from the Divine Code, these two last ideas. When there's a simple, clear, known rule, you can ask a non-Jew to tell you. If you don't know, you ask somebody else, and the non-Jew tells you, yeah, the law is blah, blah, blah. But in a specific case that is not clear, is not brought down in the books, a non-Jew should not be working or functioning as a rabbi to extract law from some other book to tell you the law is blah, blah, blah. Go talk to a rabbi, and that's it. Every single person has to know its own limitations, and the rabbi also has to know his own limitations and say, wait a second, I'm going to ask another rabbi, and I'll get back to you.